Did I hear correctly that Super Mario Galaxy is apparently going to be the sequel?
Supposedly, yeah.
That makes sense. That'd be fun.
Where was I reading? Oh, I was in it was just a random Discord server I was in. It was like an off-topic chatter, and there were other games chat, and like, I forget her name. Oh, and I got it. But they were like, talking about, oh, the trailer came out. Rosalina is my favorite character. I hope they get someone good to cast her. And then someone instantly replied, Jennifer Coolidge.
That would be
I was like,
amazing.
yeah, you know what? I would be there for Jennifer Coolidge as Rosalina.
For
Ooh,
sure.
Mario.
Oh,
Mario.
Mario. Get me more stars, Mario. Welcome to a new mini episode of Why Did We Watch This, the podcast where three friends sit down with a troubled movie, a themed cocktail, and then talk about what worked, what didn't, and how they would fix it. I am Chris Revell.
It's-a me, Brendan Trischler.
And I'm Lee Delahanty.
Yeah, so the movie we're going to be doing next in our next full-length episode is going to be 2001 The Mummy Returns.
Ooh, it's very spooky.
It is.
Nothing scarier than a CGI rock.
Well, I at least appreciate that having seen all of The Mummy movies, Mummy Returns is bad, but it's at least watchable compared to, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor, which is just like...
Yeah, we
nothing
can,
you liked about the other Mummy movies.
Right, we could talk about that one briefly when we do the episode, because yeah, I agree with you. That one is just like a fucking snooze of a picture.
But of course, we also have a delicious drink to help us get through the goofy mess that is The Mummy Return.
That we're doing is called a Mummy Returner. It is 0.75 ounces of gin, 0.75 ounces of Campari, 0.75 ounces of orange liqueur, 0.75 ounces of pomegranate juice, 0.25 ounces of Amaro Nonino, and an orange. You add the gin, the Campari, the orange liqueur, and the pomegranate juice to a shaker with ice. Shake it till it's chilled. Add a small amount of Amaro Nonino to your glass and coat it by spinning. Dispose of the excess Amaro Nonino. Strain the contents of the cocktail shaker into the glass. Express the orange rind over the drink and add orange peel to garnish. So the idea is going to be like we're going to try and do a little twisty orange peel to look like some mummy fabrics unraveling on that glass there, which should be fun. But this is basically an Egyptian take on a corpse reviver. So it's a corpse reviver, but using some more Egyptian fruits such as orange and pomegranate.
Oh, I know about pomegranate. I didn't realize orange was in the mix too. That's
orange
cool.
is on the mix too. Yes, apparently. I think these might literally be the same fruits we used for our Death on the Nile drink, because it was for the same
fitting,
reason. Yes. Also because Egypt. So, we'll see. It's different, but it's the same fruits.
But hey, we're going to be reviving a corpse.
That's right.
I am excited for the drink, but I'm also, as much as I know The Mummy Returns is not a very good movie, it does... I do have a fun time with the Mummy movies in general, so I am looking forward to that.
No, there's fun parts to it, so we've got that.
Also, one just thing to note, is this one that all three of us have seen?
I don't remember. I don't think I've seen it. If I have, gone out the...
I was just going to say that I feel like it's been a while since it's a movie all three of us are already familiar with.
And it still has.
More time.
All right, so for our discussion, we're still kind of on this YA lit headspace, and we kind of got to discussing, was there a way to almost like assemble it by its elements? Kind of similar to what had happened with I Am Number 4, was there a way to think about it in terms of like, who are you marketing it to? What's your premise? What's your genre? That kind of deal. As ever... It's another kind of like pitch game where we kind of have to dig a little deep and get creative with this. Did anyone in particular want to go first and talk about like maybe what they were thinking about?
So I can do something here if we want to do this.
Sure.
So here's the thing, right? We had already kind of talked a little bit about, I feel like we also, I would have to double check on this, but I feel like we also did a mini that boiled down to us pitching the idea for a series for young adults before.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we did, because I thought I did. I remembered mine.
Right, because I remember mine too. Mine involved a spaceship.
Mine then.
So that's part of the thing. Part of the thing is I think I already shot my load on this one as far as we can say it. So here's the thing. If you want to talk a little bit about the concept of like what we were saying in terms of reverse engineering, maybe we could start a little bit there in terms of like what is it that you're looking for with this sort of shit? Like what do you think people are looking for? YA novel.
The thing is, like, when we did our first one, and I thought about this when we talked about doing another YA, because we had done a YA movie recently, and we wanted to do something with that.
Right.
And you proposed this, like, title game, and I was like, at the core, I don't think it works, because I don't think that it works for movies. I think that it's, like, it starts with the book. We have to be proposing books. We can't be proposing. Right. We have to think.
We need source material.
Yeah, there's like never the case that you start some sort of crazy YA franchise with a movie. And if there is, I would love to know what that is.
I mean, I'm sure there are, but I think they are few and far between.
Yeah. So it's like I had a hard time wrapping my head around. I think at least this time. Like, how would we even go about doing this without thinking about it as like a book?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I have to frame it in my mind as like how books get marketed and thought of and sold and written for this audience, which I don't know as much about. I don't really think I read. I mean, I read a lot of like sort of what could be called romanticy trash, but a lot of that sort of like is like the sort of membranes of those two planes are like touching but not fully intersecting a lot of the time, especially because romanticy wants to get often like more smutty,
right?
And then it might not be like appropriate for young adults, but there definitely like are like I think shared interests there with like the typical YA audience, which I do think is primarily women.
Well, would you also agree if I said, doesn't it sort of feel like even if there is content in there that's not appropriate for YA, sometimes it almost has like a YA level emotional intelligence or like a YA level understanding of relationships. I feel that way sometimes when I read romanticy.
Like a lot of romanticy does feature, it might be written for without the audience specifically in mind, but the sort of ages that you're dealing with will be like anything from like 17 to 20. So you're kind of dealing in a similar age range of like young people who don't have much in life. Mm-hmm. And then you run into the classic issue where the romantic lead is some sort of ageless immortal or like way too old, like some sort of crazy ass power dynamic imbalance. Right.
Which feels so fucking common these days. It's difficult to think of YA without jumping to something genre or supernatural that would include that element.
Well, I mean, a lot of YA that we're thinking of doesn't really have like, a lot. Most of the YA stuff is like kids and kids. It's like weird high schooler meets weird high school. Like Divergent is like a bunch of weird kids in these weird brain coteries, and then one kid's got a weird brain.
Yeah, certainly like something like Twilight would fall under that, but it almost seems like the way you were talking, Chris, I don't think this is necessarily something you were consciously like referencing, but it feels almost like you're referring to something along the lines of like a 50 Shades of Grey, which is obviously not like, while it may be written for, a sixth grader to read in terms of how difficult it is to comprehend, it is, an adult story. It's written for adults. So like while while we can certainly talk about like the idea of like power dynamics and as they exist, I do feel like by and large a lot of that's going to be more prevalent in adult romance.
I do think it's interesting though in the example that you're naming that is
Twilight fanfiction.
YA fan fiction, of course, with the serial numbers filed off. So there is still some of a thread in there.
Right, but it's one of those things also where it's YA fanfic, but they wanted them to have sex.
Right.
What
they wanted
I was
to be
kind of
more explicit.
Connecting to with like the romanticy thing is like specifically the Sarah J. Maas ACOTAR shit that I couldn't even get through half a book. It sort of screams like YA, like it's got this like I'm not the normal girl protagonist trope.
I don't like wearing dresses.
It's like
or
that
makeup.
Combined with like the sort of like that trope that's like the most unfortunate childhood ever trope where it's like, oh, my family hates me and they make me do all the work and no one appreciates me, and then I get kidnapped by a hot immortal guy and I get put in a castle and I'm gonna bitch about that too. So I'm still gonna complain about that. So there's a lot of stuff there that felt like very that's the kind of stuff that I think is more blending with YA. And a lot of, I don't typically read, I mean, I like to think that I read only the finest garbage.
only the highest literature.
Only the highest romanticy trash for me. But I affectionately call it trash because it is kind of like the weirder mass market paperback market, right? It's like you could read one of these and then read like another one and you'd forget the first one you read by the time you finish the second one, right?
Like, sounds right.
It's just like quick and easy. It's good. It's entertaining, but it's not Shakespeare. You're not going to like tattoo that on your arm. You're not going to like remember that scene years from now or that line. You know, it's not like great literature, and it doesn't have to be. It's fun. But that's kind of like what a lot of that's where I think I compare it to like YA, that sort of same thing where it's like you read these books and you fly through them. And then by the time you're done, you can't even remember what happened in the first one anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I would also say that there are, as with all things, there are varying qualities of YA, right? Yeah. Where like some of it is quite well done and others of it is more sort of like the kind of trashy disposable sort of fiction that I think you're kind of talking about here too, Lee. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are different ends of this spectrum.
Yeah.
I also think I think there's also a thread in this where because we have a higher, it feels like these days there's more adults that will also engage in YA media.
Right.
I know this is stepping outside of books necessarily, but the number of people in their 30s who are currently all about The Summer I Turned Pretty is an interesting phenomenon. Like, and I have always believed for a while, rather, that we're encouraged to hold on to nostalgia and things that we enjoyed as children into our adulthood, it feels like, more often. And I wonder if that's maybe some part of that that keeps some of this YA-ness, even if the content is distinctly more adult.
Like, talk more about your YA-ness, Chris.
YA-ness.
Nobody asked anus, how it's anus.
But like when I was fully in my mid-20s, I read like 4 or 5 Vampire Academy novels. That wasn't aimed at me, not at that age. I read also, and I can't remember what it's called, but there was like a werewolf high schoolers one I read like 2 of. It's just interesting too that invariably these YA things get paired with supernatural elements like that, which I also find kind of interesting.
My mom threw the Miss Peregrine's books. I actually reread them.
An interesting pairing that I would not have seen coming, honestly.
She saw the movie and she liked it and she just went to read the books.
She wanted to know more about the spooky babies.
Yeah, yeah.
Were they spooky?
I guess. I don't know. She's under some sort of illusion that I've read these books. She keeps asking me and I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. I've never read them.
Forward your questions to me. I've read them. Now, this is very importantly, don't give your mom my number, but you can tell me any of these questions. But
you'll wake up at 3 a.m. to like, what did this character mean when he said,
who was this person again? So here's the thing. Part of what you were kind of saying, Chris. So part of, I think, what you were saying is you were saying that you think that there is an increased number of adults reading sort of YA categorized fiction because of nostalgia. Mm-hmm. And I do think that's certainly a big part of it. I would also say that there are other aspects at play here. I think part of it is with like my cute boy summer. I think it's like it's so close to being a beach read, first of all. Mm-hmm. And as someone who has watched all of the series, it's all taking place predominantly also after high school too. So it is more sort of like a college level YA, which is not to say that.
Are you, when you say My Cute Boy Summer, are you talking about an actual property called that? Or are you talking about The Summer I Turned Pretty?
The Summer I Turned Pretty.
Okay. I couldn't tell.
I kept forgetting the name.
I also, in the back of my mind, was like, ooh, is there something I haven't heard of?
Yes, Amazon Prime's My Cute Boy Summer. Yeah. So a lot of it takes place after high school, which is not to say that like YA cannot exist after high school, you know, like, but I think this is something that Lee had sort of mentioned. Right. And I think that's something that Lee had sort of mentioned when we were talking about I Am Number 4 the other week, is that by and large, YA tends to traffic more in high school or like you're just starting college, you know, like the summer before you're going to college. And so while I would certainly say in terms of like plotting and characters and hormones, The Summer I Turn Pretty is very much like YA adjacent. It also feels like it probably appeals to adults in the same way that Beach Reads do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I mean,
that
it's also
one does. Because that,
yeah,
one's,
no, that
like,
one's right. That specifically, because yeah, that is literally like it's set on a beach. It's set on Cape Cod.
Yeah.
It so, is like, literally a beach.
Yeah.
Unusual for right, being like a bit of a bummer, though, that one.
Yes. No, it is. That one is sort of like it also has the trademarks of teen weepy kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I guess
well,
like a lot, some of them do. There is like a whole, like we've been primarily dealing in the genre YA stuff, but like there is a whole world of like just regular ass YA,
right,
drama, romance, and a lot of it does get, I think, like, you know, it's sort of like After School Specially sometimes,
right,
like,
right,
deal
for
with
sure
this
it
issue,
is
Cancer Cuties and whatever it was,
The Fault in Our Stars,
yeah, that's the one. So like, yeah, that is definitely, I think, something that gets baked into a lot of YA lit as well. So it's easy to see, I think, why you would sort of lump The Summer I Turned Pretty into YA. But it feels like it's kind of weirdly straddling the two worlds, you know? So like, I feel like that's perhaps less of a good example of adults reading YA and more just sort of like adults reading something geared toward a younger audience, if that makes any sense. Like, I feel like I'm being pedantic here.
I have a counterpoint. I think YA audiences probably are reading The Summer I Turned Pretty, and I think
sure
there's
they are
a big audience. I think that YA can include aspirational content. I think a lot of like YA readers like to read about people in college or after graduating college. It's like that's like gonna be me someday,
right?
So I think it goes both ways.
I too can be desired that by two brothers who make me the center of their world and all existence.
Yeah, one of them has no life skills and the other has no communication skills. Which one will you choose?
Oh, I know.
I have not read or watched, but I did see it was some like screen grab with the captions up. And I guess it was one of the brothers. I don't know which one. He had curly hair.
That's Jeremiah.
But it just said, it was something to the effect of losing Belly was worse than losing Mom. And I'm like, whoa, that's a big statement.
If I could sum up The Summer I Turned Pretty, Conrad is the better guy, but needs to get like one punch in the
yes, agreed,
and yelled at and be like,
right,
do something,
right, right, like, yeah, actually act on your impulses.
It's
for
like
once.
That step meme of like the person with the stick poking.
Come on, like, do something.
Come on, do something.
Yes, yes,
yeah,
it is very much like that.
Conrad spends like 80% of the show in the background sort of moping, being
right,
sad and
sulking.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And Jeremiah is just like a fucking idiot.
Yes.
Who is basically like sort
chaos
of
chaos child.
Right, right. Who sort of like is looked upon as like this kind of like fuck up and failure. Like his thing is like, oh, he's like so popular and hot, but it's like he's kind of a fucking idiot who doesn't know how to live for most of the, like at one point in season three, he's not going to graduate college on time because he like missed registration or something. It's like, how are you alive? Like, does someone like does Belly like vomit food into your mouth every night just so that you can actually swallow?
It's why when he lost her, he was so devastated.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. And he like they both like grow up throughout the course of the series, but it is truly like it is like Lee said, like one brother is just like a fucking idiot, the other one just can't fucking talk.
Yeah. The other one has like a gag order on him somehow.
Yes.
Did you ever watch Kitty XO?
Oh, no, but I've heard of it. That's the, isn't that the spinoff from
spin-off
To All the Boys I Loved Before?
Yes, To All the Boys I Loved Before. That may be the closest thing to, like, not genre, not the crazy genre stuff, but, like, you know, original YA. Because I don't think it's based on anything. Are those books based on anything?
Which ones?
I mean, are the movies based on anything?
The movie, are To All the Boys I've Loved, were those based on
I thought
on
they
books?
Were.
Let Is Kitty
see.
XO also a book?
Maybe, let me look real quick here. XO Kitty is what you're talking about.
XO. Yeah. Well, I've said Kitty XO.
Yeah. Yeah, so the books, To All the Boys I've Loved Before, is based on a book trilogy of the same name by the same woman who wrote Cute Boy Summer.
Okay. I don't XO Kitty. I don't think XO Kitty is based on anything.
No, that
I
seems to be, from what I'm seeing here, original content.
Yeah. Now, I have not seen much of... I've seen all of season one, and I've seen only some of season two. It's pretty... not unhinged, but I wouldn't go that far, but it's not unhinged.
There are some hinges.
There's, like... the hinges are getting looser. in that one.
They're starting, the screws are starting to undo themselves.
Yeah, it's more of a conversational cul-de-sac, but it's something that I would love to have discussed with anyone that has seen it.
Maybe I should watch it. I'll add it to the list of things I need to get caught up on.
The first season is about Kitty having a bisexual awakening and then ruining her life, like just ruining sort of multiple lives in the process of her finding this out. It's pretty good.
It's what makes good teen drama, I suppose.
Yeah. It's like a love, like the amount of points in this love polygon kind of grow to insanity, I think.
I will say, and I know this kind of eliminates a lot of YA, but I do tend to get frustrated when YA media just kind of knee jerk falls back on like a love triangle situation.
I personally
don't love those.
Right.
So just the saturation of them is a lot for me.
We talked a lot about love triangles, I think, over the past couple months, just because of that, them appearing in a lot of the shit that we've been watching. And so I think we've also talked about, like, I know I mentioned like my reasons for not liking them. But I mean, if you think about it from a logistical perspective, this is like such a huge fucking thing in a high schooler's life.
It's true
that like it is like so much of high school is like, I am in love with boy not in love with me. Like, why not me, boy? And so I do think that that's probably why so much of this is burdened with love triangles. And I mean, I hate them too. And I feel like by and large, the young adult fiction that I've read and actually liked is ones that have not trafficked in that so heavily. But on the other hand, it's like, I can't really begrudge you for using them because there's a reason why they're such a tried and true staple of this genre. But on the other hand, like, I do kind of wish that you could maybe find a more interesting way of exploring that, you know, right. What I mean? Or an interesting way of resolving it, which it feels like by and large people have not figured out how to do.
I mostly just get really frustrated with like love triangles. First of all, they have like a very aside from them being in YA, I have a very specific beef with love triangles from Asian dramas, which they are all over the place. There's like a classic concept of like a second male lead or a second female lead, where it's like, and it's always like, who's going to be the one? And you kind of know sometimes, and sometimes you will get surprised. But my thing with love triangles, aside from like it being like a tired trope, is this constant feeling like never the right person is picked. It's never it's always the worst one. And I'm like, why?
Well, yeah, I mean that is also sort of like the inherent risk of a love triangle, right? Is that you run the risk of like half your viewing audience being like, what the fuck are you doing with this person? And half the audience being like, this is exactly what it should have been all the time. So that's like kind of like the other, I guess, peril of doing love triangles. You sort of run the risk of alienating or upsetting your audience.
That's like the thing with like The Summer I Turned Pretty. That was like a huge shipping wars thing with Jeremiah and Conrad. And I don't understand.
No, I don't need, because again, this is one of those things where it's like, to me, it's never a question because one of them's like a fucking idiot and the other one just has to sort of like grow a pair, right? Like it's just kind of like you just need to like tell people how you feel about things, and the other one has to like, you have to learn how to be a functioning human at the age of like 22.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
so
like,
it's just
neither
like,
is ideal, but like one of them can do things as a person.
Right,
so.
Exactly. One of them is studying
to
be a doctor.
Function.
Yeah.
The other one like had to flunk out of college because he didn't register for a class. Or something. Like, I think I know which one I would go from the two of these.
Yeah.
Just on that subject, but kind of pivoting it slightly, something that, as someone who read all of the, or at least the trilogy of Hunger Games novels, I was very interested that, at least for the first two books, Katniss is decidedly kind of anti-romance. She actually doesn't want a marriage or kids or any of that. Interesting reasons for why. And I thought that was both a just an interesting thing to put in your character, but it would also let the story stand out from the noise, which is just so many love triangles. And that's why I was bummed that they like shoehorn one in at the end.
Right. Well, so here's the thing. And it's been a long ass time since I've read those books. I feel like I read them when the movies came out and have not reread them since. But my vague recollection, and feel free to tell me if I'm wrong here, is that the aerodirectional chart is basically like, PETA is into Katniss. Katniss is not at all into PETA. Katniss is a little bit into Gale. And I think that's because you're saying it like it's skewing a love triangle. And I think it's not really a skewing a love triangle. It's just not making a love triangle the focus. Do you know what I mean? It's like it's a love triangle in the sense that there is one character who's like, why don't girl love me? And the other one's kind of like, well, I kind of like this guy.
Sure.
I haven't read
it. But at least in my memory, she was like, it's not important to me. That's not something I'm pursuing.
No, and I mean,
if I'm remembering correctly, the story at the time was that the publisher kind of was like, love triangles is what's books. So,
yeah, I mean, I would want to like see a citation for that to know for sure. The thing I think with it also is that like that is also kind of an example of what I was talking about when I was saying how a love triangle is ended because one of the characters does something so shitty that they can no longer be considered part of the love triangle, where like Gail commits a war crime. And so she's like, well, I can't be with him, so guess I'm going to be with the other guy now instead. So like, I think like that's kind of still the same sort of issue, you know, regardless of whether or not it's being positioned as a love triangle in the sense that it's the main focus of the stories. It's something that's kind of still baked into the DNA of the series. It is admittedly less about like, will I get boy than a lot of the other ones are, you know, certainly less than your Summer I Turn Pretties or something along those lines. So like,
Twilights.
I do think, yes, exactly. So like, I do think it's to be commended for that in the
Gothic.
Yes. Your Southern's Gothics. It's to be commended in the sense that, you know, there's less of a focus on romance than there is on this character's actual journey, which is great. But it does still kind of sort of fall back on the bare bones of a love triangle as far as that's concerned.
Yeah, it's a very good point.
Yeah,
I gotta say, like, I feel like I I've been thinking about it that much, but I think I kind of skipped like a lot of the YA stuff, like phases or whatever in my life, because of just like what I was reading and also my personality growing up, where I like started reading like again, like way too adult material, like way too young, like reading like Kay Scarpetta novels and like Temperance Brennan books, and like the fantasy that I was reading that I got from my mom and Isaac Asimov shit. And at a certain point, like these things like Harry Potter were coming out and we were like approaching college or near college or latter day high school. And like a lot of other the YA stuff was popping off. And I was like, you know, in that era of like way too pretentious and having been reading all the other shit I was reading, I was like, I'm not going to read about people in school, high schoolers. I'll read about adults doing adult shit. And I just like, don't think I read, like, I didn't read Hunger Games. I don't think I read like any of the big series that a lot of people our generation would have read. Nor have I really gone back, I think, and touched it. I can't summon to mind a single YA thing that I've read. I've really been like kind of quietly racking my brain. And I don't, again, like the romanticism.
We get it. You're too elevated.
I mean, no, I happily call half of what I read trash. But it's just not, it wasn't that kind of, you know, people in high school. It was about like, you know, people in their mid-20s and starting their gentleman wizard careers and shit.
I mean, actually, Lee, going off of what you said there, reminds me of something I had meant to bring up earlier and then kind of forgot to when we were talking about it. When you, Chris, were talking about the idea that you think that there's kind of a focus on nostalgia being a big part of why adults
nostalgia,
are reading stuff like this. Right. The one thing I would throw out there also is that for me personally, one of the reasons why I tend to read gay YA is because it did not exist by and large when I was in high school. You know, there was a little bit of it, certainly, like certainly more than you would have gotten if you had come of age in the 90s, but you know,
absolutely.
Still right, but still kind of like not really a huge selling point. So I think a lot of it for me is sort of like it is a bit of a like revisiting your lost youth, you know, just because it was something that you didn't experience,
kind of like vicarious almost.
Exactly.
Or like a reclaiming of the media that you should have had.
Right. And so I think by and large, I'm not reading things like The Summer I Turned Pretty, despite the fact that I watched it all on Netflix, but or on Amazon Prime, just because like it's a much easier ask to be like, watch this series than it is to be like, read all three of these books. That'd be kind of like, oh, boy, I don't know if I want to fucking read all this shit, because by and large, any of the YA stuff I think I'm reading is usually not about straight people. So I think that's kind of that's kind of something that I have to take into account in terms of why
right.
I might find adults who are reading it, which is just to say, like, that's just sort of my specific experience. I couldn't tell you, you know, why necessarily a straight woman of my age would be doing it too.
Well, but I think that's totally legit. I've done that a little, but it's probably been a while. But I kind of love that. It's you're going back to experience the media you wish you had access to when you right. were that age.
Right.
I can only think of one gay YA I think I read when I was a young adult. It was called Geography Club. You ever hear of that one?
I know Geography. I've never read it, but I do know it.
It's basically just like, we have a gay straight alliance, but we're calling it Geography Club, so no one comes and beats us up.
Right, right, exactly. I mean, like, I remember
I
that.
Mean, what, they're not going to beat you up for a Geography Club?
Yeah, I know. Right? That's even worse.
There's like some twist or another where I think, like, a bully does come in and is like, no, I just wanted to learn about geography.
Everyone tugs their collars.
No. Hurriedly pull out a map and start talking about Europe.
Yes. So that one's Europe, right?
Well, it is a cover story that's kind of hard to maintain because, like, what do you even do in Geography Club then? You're just, like, pointing at parts of maps and being like, that's
I mean, I guess the idea would just be that, like, you're learning about the different countries too, right? It's like, in theory, it's yeah. like, this week we're doing Finland.
I'm sure,
right?
Sure.
Yeah.
You're learning when the borders change.
Yes, that's right.
This year, we're looking at a map from the 1770s.
Right, learning why Italy yeah. wasn't a country then.
Let's learn about the dissolution of the Soviet Union.
Yes.
Man.
So does anyone else have any other YA thoughts?
I mean, not really. I mean, I think I would like, it'd be good to kind of touch on, I think, like, again, I think the comparison to Romanticy is strong. I think that there is a lot of shared tropes and, like, sort of marketing,
tones.
Marketability and tone employed, at least in the genre. If we're talking strictly the genre stuff, I don't really, having never, I mean, I guess I've seen things like Dash and Lily and To All the Plus I've Loved and all this other stuff, that I guess more like grounded and not just like drama or comedy. But what we kind of, I think, traffic in and what's, I think, fun, or at least to me, is the genre, is the crazy genre stuff. And that, I think, is where I see a lot of the similarities. And I think, there's a lot of identical tropes and, like, again, target audiences that I think come up where it's like, there's a lot of, I don't know if this is like the female version of a power fantasy where it's like, again, we talked about this, where there's like multiple hot guys that are interested in you.
I do think it kind of is.
Like, I have 6 boyfriends and they all want me and yeah. I don't know what to do.
Right. Like, I don't know if it's necessarily what you would call a power fantasy
per se.
I mean, like, it kind of
it's
is.
It's like wish
because
fulfillment,
it is,
I guess.
Right. Right. Yeah. I think, I would say more wish fulfillment. It's kind of power fantasy in the sense that, like, it does put a woman in a position of power where it's like, I get to choose which of the 2 cute boys I will be with now. But it is definitely sort of like a wish fulfillment sort of thing. And I think, again, sort of by that note, just to, like, circle back kind of on what I had brought up when we were talking about I Am Number 4, like, what is the successful boy YA series? Like, is there one that you can think of? I'm sure there's something that I'm just not hitting on, you know? But I'm trying to think, and by and large,
I mean, I hesitate to say it's just for boys, but would Harry Potter count?
Is that even YA, though? Yeah, but is that even YA? Because it starts off as Harry Potter is like a 10-year-old. I think I would still
look at that as YA, personally.
I think it's fiction that sort of grows with the reader. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
Like,
if most of it is taking place during the teen years, which it does.
Yeah, most of it. But, like, he starts off as, like, what, an 11-year-old or something? So, I don't know. I don't know if I entirely count it as YA. I guess you could. I consider it more, I don't know, like child fantasy, I guess. I don't know. It's one of those things where it's kind of like in a nebulous area just because of the fact that, like, the books grow up as the character grows up, you know, which is not to say that this is the only series that has ever pulled something like that before.
Yeah.
But I think it does make it a little bit trickier to categorize just because the tone changes as it goes on a little. So I don't know.
I don't know that there's the differences might fade with, like, this kind of stuff, at least genre wise. But I think that it is more typical, like, you got a protagonist. And I think that this is the case with female driven YA too, where there is some degree of, like, chosen one-ism or like this character is uniquely positioned to overcome some great challenge or hurdle.
Right,
or
right,
plot.
Right.
I haven't seen or read it, but would something like Maze Runner count?
I think
Maze Runner is probably like the most successful of those, I would almost think. I've never
it
seen
it. It seems aimed at boys, right?
I mean, well, yeah. Like the main characters are kind of all boys, I'm pretty sure.
E. Reagan might also count.
Yeah, that's true. E. Reagan.
E. Reagan.
The virtual Ronald
it always
Reagan
makes
simulation.
Me chuckle. E. Reagan. Now, tell the Gipper what you want.
Well.
But yeah, I think that it
a lot
is
of dragons
small, like,
out here, mommy.
I even think that a lot of the YA for the ladies, for the female audiences, will have like yes, multiple boys are hot and they all want me, but I also have like some sort of crazy power. I can't think of one that's like specifically YA, but I'm thinking of like in like this sort of like a sort of more famous like why because they made a TV show of it, A Discovery of Witches. She's like some sort of like crazy prophesized witch, but also a super hot vampire is like instantly like falls in love with her at first sight, and they like join forces and have like super kids or whatever the fuck they do. And that happens a lot where it's like there's some sort of like fey or you know otherwise powered or crazy you know. Demigod-like man who's interested in me, but then I also have some sort of crazy power that I discover and come into and grow with throughout the story that is instrumental in saving the day.
Isn't again, this is a series that I know nothing about, have not seen or read, but isn't Divergence sort of that?
What's that? Divergence? Yeah. Divergence is like everyone's got
a special ability.
Not really. It's not really about ability.
Well,
it's societal. It's purely like societal. Like it's like you have like you take like a fucking Myers-Briggs test and it's like you're a paragon or like you're you're a seeker or whatever. You have some sort of type that's like people who are incorruptible or whatever end up becoming political leaders because they're seen as being like having too strong principles and they can't be corrupt. Mm-hmm. There are like people who are brave that become cops and shit. And like her brain just like doesn't fit. It's basically like she's neurodivergent. Like it's like, okay. What if neurodivergence was like outlawed?
Well, it's that, but it's just the idea of like, it's similar to the sorting. It's similar to like the Hogwarts houses where it's way too basic to cover the entire human lead of experience. So it's like, because she is not just a farmer, just a scientist, or like just a warrior, they're like, well, we just don't know what the fuck to do with you then.
Right.
Yeah. So I think she ends up joining the like warrior people, but she's like kind of masking or pretending. Because if she was divergent, like I think you get, you know, put in some sort of like holding cell or something. Like they don't want you if you don't fit neatly into their boxes. So it's not really like power. It kind of feels like Percy Jackson in the way that I get the title right.
Yeah,
it's like kind of likening neurodivergence to a superpower a little bit because her divergent brain lets her do a bunch of different stuff, but it's really that she's thinking outside the box and not, you know, being in here to this like, you know, wacko dystopian society that she, but also she's probably doesn't have like a, it's like either could be read as like a parable for that or she's just bucking the trend of this crazy society and nobody actually fits these Myers-Briggs types that don't exist.
Right.
But yeah, it's very much that, but it is like, again, she's the one that like breaks the chains. It's very much like Katniss, right? Where it's like Katniss takes the tribute and ends up being the one that's going to like break the chain of all this.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
So I don't
she's not just like other girls. She's not just like anyone else, period.
Yeah. But I don't think it's like always necessarily that different, but I do think that you do get this thing with, which I think is nice. And when it's targeted at women, you will get this thing of like, here's just like some guys that are just into you and will basically do whatever you want them to do. In a good version, like obviously you still have like Sarah J Maas where the guys are also like horrible and need to be punched around a lot
right,
but by someone who won't do it because the female is not going but in a lot of the ones that like I've read that are not necessarily YA themes but could be read by YA audience, you get these like, and a lot of the like anime that I've recommended to Chris sometimes, frankly, too, you do get a lot of anime aimed at young women where it is just like, it reminds me of the What If Boys Were Nice movie.
Home Again.
Look at all it's like Home Again where it's like, look at all these men who are just like really nice and supportive green flag guys that are just going to help you out. And one of them is going to be your boyfriend. Have fun.
Yeah. That's
well,
fair.
And it is almost like, in a weird way, it makes it a cozier, comfier show because then you're like, okay, well then no matter what you choose, we're golden, baby. It's okay. Yeah. We're fine. There kind of are no wrong options.
And a lot of times it's like, really, there's only one real option, but there just happened to be a bunch of other hot guys that are just there who aren't interested in her romantically, but who are just like nice guys. We're just nice boys. And that is, frankly, a nice touch. And that is, I think, the female power fantasy. But yeah, that is the kind of thing that I see, at least in a couple more recent stuff. And I would like to see more of that, frankly.
Yeah. Just well, it would at least be something different and would be kind of pushing the form into new places, which would be pretty nice.
Yeah. I mean, I really, we need to be done with like these toxic dudes in YA romance, any kind of YA romance with these toxic love interests. I mean, there are girls that are toxic too. Get them all out. Flush them out. We're done with this. We're above it all now. Okay. Nice people only.
Nice people only. That's the new YA direction.
Green flags only. No more red flags.
My summer of green flags.
Summer of green flags.
Maybe there'll be a little bit of a tonal shift in that direction. Because, you know, if Superman and Fantastic Four has anything to say about it, we are going to head into a more what if people were nice kind of space.
What if people were nice?
We could also call back another mini discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's it. That's my only thought is, I think there's a pipeline from like YA, at least for women, from YA to romantic, a very strong one. And I think that they share a lot of tropes. And I hope that those tropes evolve out of some of the more tired shit that we see.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Well, that, as always, was a really enriching, free-ranging discussion. Mm-hmm. It's another issue in the world of media that we've solved simply through our own brilliance. So you're welcome, everyone.
Yeah.
Come back at us in 2 weeks when we're going to talk about The Mummy Returns.
Our Halloween spectacular, baby.
I know. I cannot believe we're literally about to cross over into October.
Yep.
We're so close.
Crossover.
You can find us at drappack.com, where you can find every episode of the podcast, even the ones that our RSS feed wants to hide from you for some reason.
Conspiracy.
It's a conspiracy. They're out to get us. They're out to silence us. But for now, I guess we'll just buy this one out.